Are there questions you'd like to maybe ask that, I don't know, that Ben and I can put our heads together on? Or I assume there's probably some questions that you'd like to see some crossover from real estate to his world or vice versa. So I don't mind playing with that a little bit. Anything that you want me to give him a hard time or him to me a hard time?
Let me, I know that would be terribly entertaining for everybody. However, I just told you what I would do. I mean, you don't understand. People will say to me, you know, that was really great, and I think they bought that. Now, what do you really do? What I just told you is the deal. I'll be straight with you, you be straight with me. This is what I'll give you. Then sales ability, that's in all the books. We're not going to read them to you. Sales ability, your increased sales skills, etc. But operate from a position of strength. So you don't get hammered into a good deal. I think sometimes, Bruce, correct me if I'm wrong, because I see it done in a lot of businesses where the salesperson has the ability to adjust the figure. You know, he has some playing room.
Right.
What they do is they start chasing the sale instead of chasing the profit. And they wind up with lots of sales on which they've made no money or very little money. Chase the profit. It's not, I want this house, I want this house, I want this house. It's, I want to make $40,000 on this house. And if that's possible, we'll structure it in a reasonable manner. If it's not possible, it's been nice.
You know, let me add something to that, because I don't view what I do when I deal with somebody face-to-face very tricky, because I've already told you what I'll do. I sit down with somebody and I say, I may not be the best option you have. If you'll cooperate with me and share your situation, I'll bombard your situation with every solution I know, and I will only be one of those. And if I am not the best option, I'm going to tell you. If I am the best option, I'm going to tell you that too, and I'm going to expect us to come to an agreement. Now, in essence, that's what you said. I'm going to have the character to tell you you have other options that are better, but I'm also going to have the strength of closing ability to close you even if you think I'm not your best option. And that's really the infiltrator concept in the last chapter of Closers 2. I want to be able to be strong enough to sit across the table from somebody that's about to make a mistake because they're greedy. And you know that about that one close that I specifically used that word. And later I got a 4-page thank you letter, and 10 years later, the son came to my office and said, you changed our whole family's life. Those types of things don't happen unless you've earned the right to disagree with their conclusions, and that's in your seminar. So I literally would be able to look across the table, and I think part of it is the strength comes from knowing that if it isn't right, I will pass. And I really think that the infiltrator concept combined with tremendous skill is the most powerful way to approach our business. How many people here ever get repeat business from past people that they've bought a house from? It's an uncommon thing. I mean, that's a lot of hands for our business. Mm-hmm. It's usually the farthest thing from anybody's mind is business is slow. I think I'll call all the past people I've bought houses from and see if they have another one or if they have a referral for me. That's just not even in our thought process. And I think it's because we haven't really approached it from the point of view thinking that that's even logical to suggest. Where I really think, why not? If we are, in fact, a legitimate option. And in a marketplace that's coming, what's going to be really good, if you're going to deal with people directly, we are going to be a clear-cut winner in the time factor. In the last couple of years, didn't they have a point by saying, well, I really don't need to worry about selling it fast. All I have to do is say it's for sale, and magically 20 people will show up. That's legit. So we did have a time advantage. It went from their sale was probably going to close in 30 days. Ours was in 10. So if 20 days was important, we were the winner. Now it's going to be a 180-day or longer scenario for them, and we have still 10 days. Now we have a clear-cut advantage. So if speed is important, we have no competition except for ourselves. And so, in essence, then we do come from a strength position. That's why I put you in a position over there with the negotiation example that I did. The team at the 1031 exchange that had 44 days left or whatever, more than one day, all made the correct decision and passed on that transaction, because that, why buy an oil backyard when you didn't have to? But when you had one day left, you sometimes did make the mistake because it seemed like you had no other option. I put you in that position because I wanted you to see that if you try to get too motivated or your time frame is the same as the seller's, you've lost your inherent advantage. And I want to mention that example is most of mine most of those negotiating examples that we do have multiple learning things, and one of them was the deal should have not gone together. The best answer was, I'm sorry you have an oil problem, I don't want to adopt it, even if it costs me $250,000 in tax. And the other side is that never would you sell that property without disclosure. Because do you think you got away with something? No, you're going to be sued and lose all the money that you netted anyway, plus the person that bought it is going to have to clean it up and they're going to make nothing. That's how to make a disaster out of the transaction. So whenever I do those examples, there's lots of different things. And the other thing that's interesting about those examples is you're forced to work in a team. And in essence, there's two lessons of that. When you put 10 people together, you are looking at you in the face. Your worst and your best character qualities are going to be in that group. None of us are so pure that under the certain conditions, we might not try to get away with slipping the oil backyard across the finish line if we are desperate enough for money. And so you face, when you look at a group and somebody in that group says, I don't think we have to disclose that. Trust me, you're capable of wanting that too. In a group setting, it forces the group to deal with the being honest or not. But if we put ourselves in a position where we're under the gun, we're all capable of a problem. The other thing it does is, doesn't that complicate the negotiation? Because unless you're the go-to person in charge, it's very frustrating because you're sitting on the sideline going, oh, don't say that, say this. And I bring that up because that's what it's like having partners in business. When you have, I get this a lot, I'm meeting with someone in foreclosure, can I just suggest that I make up their back payments and then I become 50% owner of the property? That was just brought up to me today. Every time you do that, you're in business with someone you don't know. What if they don't cooperate with the rest of the plan? You're gonna have nightmare after nightmare, so don't do that. Okay? Yes.
One of the issues I've run across is when you send out the mailers and you have people calling in, the vast majority right now are looking for retail price, you know, maybe thinking they can sell it to you and save a commission. But I just get the gut feeling that there's some of those people aren't being totally forthright and may be possible sellers on the house. So I was wondering.
You are correct.
Okay. So how do you, what questions would you ask besides what's on the questionnaire to get in there and find out who those people are so that you don't lose them and they might end up selling to somebody else 6 months down the road?
Well, that questionnaire will probably get most of those answers out because it sort of challenges them at the end. In other words, if they are in fact calling you up to get retail, I don't mind explaining the investor business to them a little bit because, you know, we do have to have a margin, and I will ask them about their time frame. And so if they no way give you any way to close, in other words, if they aren't, then they might lie to you, and then they're a waste of time. Okay, it's worth $600, I want $598, give you a $2,000 discount. Okay, that's a long ways to go for anybody. That's probably not the phone call you're going to convert. But it's worth a stab. Did you really think that I was having trouble finding, and a little humor is okay, did you think I was having trouble finding a house to buy at retail? Did you think I needed to run an ad or send a mailer to do that? I mean, I would play with it a little bit and get them to laugh, and then they'd go, well, no. You know what? if you don't mind, why don't we be straight with each other? I've been doing this for a long time, and maybe you have a situation I've seen before. Why don't you just run your situation by me? Let me give you some suggestions. I don't have to be a part of it. In other words, I don't have to be the solution, but just tell me what it is. Why did you pick up the, why did you call on my mailer? Why did you call on my ad? You know, it really is more interesting when you do a mailer, that can be true. People can pick that up and go, I wonder what my house is worth and kind of want a free appraisal. But when you run an ad in the newspaper and people call, just think about yourself. Do you going to go through the newspaper on Sunday and accidentally find a We Buy Houses column and then call the numbers just because you want to know? That's not normal. And so, you know, you can get a little nosy about that one. And so I would maybe challenge it a little bit, hear their situation. And usually you find that first line of defense is all they have. After that, it's, oh, I really do have a situation. And I really do think when you're talking about the concept of buying the close ones, it's the people that can get past that first line of nonsense, they get to the truth, that have a chance. And you know what? Those people need to talk to somebody about that. That's, in essence, why you lost that house one day, was there wasn't somebody calling the bluff saying, do you know if you do this, your house is going to ultimately go to the courthouse steps and you're going to lose that. I mean, in a way, you have to earn the right to get to that statement, but it's a favor when you tell somebody that. So if, you know, in the next round of conversation where they're trying to tell you, I want retail and all that, and they end up with a time scenario that you know that they're not going to meet without somebody like you buying it, then I would start putting on a little bit more pressure because it's in their best interest as well. I don't want to be the guy that ends up just making people happy and getting avocados, though. I ultimately want to say, okay, we have a chance to put a deal together. You should be selling it to an investor, and since that's true, it might as well be me. And then I can get a little bit better at closing when I know that this is going to be sold to an investor. So I do want to prove that to myself first, though. Typically, that's what my first attempt is to see who's going to buy this house. And if the investor word starts showing up on that house, then I want it to be me.
Could I suggest also, can I hitchhike on that? God, I hate that. I've been in California too long. Do you mind if I share with you for just a moment the hitchhike on that idea? a huge amount of being successful with big ticket sales, and that's what you're in. It's probably a factor at Walmart, but it's not worth the trouble to learn because you're still going to make minimum wage. But with big ticket items where you're not particularly making a lot of money, it's your attitude. I know people get tired of that. I get tired of telling people, you know, and be sure and write down your goals. And they go, oh, here's that goal thing again. Well, where's your goal list? You know, I got them. I write down goals all the time. Some of them are really silly little goals, but I don't get this until I do this, or I don't get this until I do that. I could afford everything on the list. It's not a problem, but I want to earn it because I don't have a sales manager to pat me on the back. I have to do it myself. But it's attitude. And the attitude I have is more like a doctor. You know, when you go to your doctor, and, you know, a doctor, a friend of mine has syphilis, and he's too busy to come in and tell you about it, so I thought I'd discuss it with you. And what he needs to do is take penicillin. Well, okay. He's too busy for that. Could I take the shots for him? You know, you don't go into a doctor generally and lie, or else you wouldn't have felt the pain, made the appointment, and so on. You go in, he shuts the door, he pulls the chart out of the little thing so he knows who you are. Hi, Ben, how are you today? In the grocery store, he doesn't know my name. It's fascinating. But anyway, with the chart in his hand, hi, Ben, how are we feeling? I have this pain, da-da-da-da. Well, let me check this, and taps here. And he says, I'm going to ask you a few questions, da-do-da-do-da-do. And then this is what you're going to do. And he hands it to me. And I hand it to his nurse, who faxes it over to Raley's, our local grocery store, drugstore. And I go in and I take it from a pharmacist who went to school. He's a professional, he or she, there's several of them back there, who's a professional. And I go home and put unknown medicines in my mouth from these corrupt, horrible pharmaceutical companies I hear about all the time on the news, and swallow them, and then I feel better. I don't negotiate with the doctor. because he doesn't set up that mood, that attitude. He doesn't go, now, if I ask you to take metoprolol, would you be willing to do that, or would you rather just stick with aspirin? See, I'm not qualified. He knows I'm not qualified. I know I'm not qualified. Shelley Berman, the old comedian, used to tell a story. This is back in the early, I've been flying commercially since I was six, and I'm 64 almost now, so if that gives you any idea of how long I've been on airplanes. Well, in the Shelley Berman era, which wasn't that long ago, less than 10% of all Americans had been on an airplane. So it was funny to make jokes about airplanes, and this is into the 60s. And he said, when I get on an airplane, he said, I'm starting to see some of these young pilots and they're making me nervous. He said, when I get on an airplane, I want to see a hat that's crushed like MacArthur's because he's worn headphones over it so long. I want to see squinty eyes here from hours. My bush pilot friend here knows what I'm talking about. Squinty eyes from hours of staring into the sun as he saved people's lives. I want to see gray at the temples. I want to think daddy's going to take me flying, which is getting sort of frightening. I got on a flight going to Mexico the other day that all female cabin attendants, or whatever we're calling stewardesses this week, and a pilot, co-pilot, and flight engineer, all women. And the door was open because we had nothing happening. I looked in and I said, an all-female crew today. And one of them laughed and said, does that bother you? And I said, no. I know you're trained, but what if something breaks? You know? So what you have to do is understand your position and take it, claim it. I don't go in on my hands and knees to anybody's home, office, or on the phone. I am Ben Gay. I don't mean I'm Ben Gay, the semi-famous quasi-guru borderline psychic. I am Ben Gay, whether you ever heard of me or not. You have to train people how to treat you.
I like that.
Yeah.
I like that.
You literally have to train people how to treat you. Most of you came up to me, and when we first talked, what did you call me? Mr. Gay. This is a first name society. We're in California, where people at McDonald's say, how you doing, bud? You know, from behind the counter. I say, you talking to me? No, I'm not Bud. If I elect to tell you my name, I'm Mr. Last Name. In the meantime, I'm Sir. What would you like, Sir? Do you understand that? And you go, well, yeah, but it wasn't a big deal. If you don't think it's a big deal, get the manager and I'll have it explained to you differently. I'm 64 years old. I've been up and down and over and out, and as Sinatra says, and no little pimple-faced jerk at McDonald's is going to say bud to me or anything else like that. Now, that's a minor point, but the reason you call me Mr. Gay is I act like Mr. Gay, and when I refer to myself up here, what do I usually say? Mr. Gay, I train you how to address me, how to look at me. And then when you come up and talk to me and say, Mr. Gay, what do I immediately say? Call me Ben. But first, we're going to establish, I'm the instructor, I stand up front, you're the student. Let's get that down. Now, once we all know that, call me Ben.
Let me just make a point, too, because a lot of what's been going on in the last few years, the power has definitely felt like it's been in the property owner. And that is going to change, and we have to remember that change exists. So that now it's going to definitely shift to the person that has the cash, not the equity. Cash is much more comfortable in the next 5 years than equity. Equity is a very fleeting thing in a down market, depending on their time frame. And so it's very much to our advantage. So when you're negotiating, keep in mind that, in fact, you have the superior commodity, and you don't give up that position. You don't need to. There will be plenty of nexts on the list, and you'll have them in a catalog probably before a year's out, a whole stack of auctions to go to, and they'll be full of people just like us in the audience that go, I'm not buying retail today, so the auctioneer better lower their price or they're going to take all the inventory back home. And they'll get the idea, and we'll win.
The big ones are already doing it. I do work with J.P. King. They're the largest luxury home auction people, and they're scrambling right now. I'm not giving out any secrets, but they are scrambling and having a hard time with people who are suddenly hearing the new truth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, well, what can you get? That's what an auction's for. We're going to find out what you're going to get. And one of my clients who works with J.P. King, but he is also a client of mine, just had an auction in Phoenix, and they got put 40 people through the house in 2 days. Then had the auction and had 3 honest to good checks with them offers, and the owner turned down all 3 because it wasn't the dream he had in mind.
Mm.
Well, the market just spoke.
Mm-hmm.
Any house will sell, any house, if it's priced right. It may not be a price you can even imagine it so low in a given circumstance. Down in Cape Canaveral, when I was working with NASA, when they laid off all those people after the little charge at the moon and so on, people were just driving by the bank and dropping off their keys. You know, I'm sorry. I mean, blocks of houses were left vacant. At the right price, somebody will buy those. What's the right price at that point? About 10 bucks, probably, something like that, or pick up the back interest or pay the taxes or what have you. But anything will sell. In the yacht business, people say, I'm having trouble selling this yacht. And the answer always is, price too high. You price a yacht right, it'll sell in 24 hours. So some of these people need to be told the truth. Become doctors. Have that attitude. I'm the doctor. Somebody calls up and says, what I want to buy? Well, you know, in the closer series, it's all pretty much the same. I mean, you just get more of things in the various packages. So it'd be very easy for me to say to everybody who phones, or have anybody else say to anybody who phones, get this one. Well, we make more sales by saying, I really can't do that till I ask you a few questions. How long have you been in selling? How much do you make? Be straight with me. I'll be straight with you. You be straight with me. How much do you make? How much did you make last year in selling? Well, so and so. Are you telling me the truth? The next answer is usually about half of what they just said, but that's what I hope to make in the next 12 months. I said, all right, so let's be straight. You're not doing well. You need everything I can give you. You need to sign up for the coaching, but we're not even going to do that today, but you need to sign up for the coaching. I want you to start with this, I want you to do this, and then having asked them other questions, I may want you to go to Dale Carnegie and sign up for their course on public speaking or something, you know, whatever. I give them a whole raft of things that they need to do, and then I tell them, this is it. And they say, well, you know, I'd like to just start out with a book. I said, well, go to the bookstore. You came to one of the most successful people in selling in the world. You asked for my advice, I gave it to you, and now you're going to discount that and go to a bookstore? You got to be kidding me. Why don't you just grit your teeth and do what you're supposed to do? Well, fair enough. Just so simple.
Ben, your information was primarily on closing and, you know, one-time contact. And Bruce, what you've been saying in the buying systems in moving into quadrant two is going to be building relationships.
Well, you know what's interesting, and let me just, if you need to, after I answer it, if you need to go further, if you read the last chapter of Closers 2, what's interesting is that the one-call closer business, where you would think that you only have one chance and you'll never see these people again, if it's conducted right, you end up with a lifetime client because you are now trusted, and that's the whole point. His model at the end of that chapter, the end of the second book, is actually saying that all sales can be repetitive in nature because you become the trusted person in your niche. So literally, I think at the pinnacle of our business, if we were the most successful, I should literally be able to meet with any one of you and sit down with you and be the first choice. Why? Because I'm going to buy your house for more than you get from a realtor? No. Because you know that I'm going to tell you the truth about what your options are, what money you'll come out with in each of those options, and then let you decide which one is best for you. And if I violently disagree with that, I'm going to tell you and have you avoid it. Now, literally, if you trusted me to that extent, wouldn't I have become a sales infiltrator in the real estate world that you're in, and I would have earned that right, because what more could you possibly want? Do you see what I'm saying? Okay. So the buying of the wholesale properties, we really think is a one-call thing. And yes, we're going to be transferring to where we become a sales infiltrator, let's say, to an agent now who controls inventory. Well, what if we're the best scenario for him to run it by? What if he really goes, what if we were of such a character where we're meeting and going, okay, here's a list of 10 properties. Bruce, what do you think I should do with these? You know, I think your lender can get retail for 8 of those, and I think they ought to blow off 2 of them because they have illegal room additions, and one's got a septic tank underneath one of those. In other words, would that be a reasonable relationship to have where you have a guy like me with experience saying, let's let the lender get retail on this and we'll take this? Now do you understand what a sales infiltrator is doing? He's doing what's in your best interest, and because I have that character, it works out best for me too. That's in essence what it is. How hard is that sales meeting? Is that difficult? Do you feel like you have to learn tricky closes? See, that's what's cool about it. There isn't. We either have a legitimate option in the real estate business or we don't. And a legitimate option is you can sell it yourself. And legitimately, I would bring back out of the corner, I would bring a stack, if I'm dealing with an owner, the 100-page pile for the last transaction I had in Rosemont. That's how many pages are involved in a transaction. I doubt that they want the legal problems that they could have if they didn't understand those pages. So I think that's out. If they don't go for that, I would produce just an article that just said that the median price of a sale by owner is 13% less than the listed property. So what are you saving? Nothing. You got liability and no more money. Yeah, let's go for that plan. Okay, so that, let's forget that one. But legitimately, yes, list it with a realtor. Time frame, maybe 6 months. Here's your net. Over here, you got in 10 days. If we were going to pay full price for the property, would there ever be the need of another listing in the world? Why? Our service is superior. Period. No one could compete with us. If we could afford to buy your house for full price, there would no longer be a listing needed. You wouldn't even think about it. Now, I'd rather go through the fun of people walking through my house and taking longer. So what we have to do, in essence, in a sale, you're saying, I have to reserve my money for the people that value our service. And they tell us that by leaving behind a margin for us. Does that make sense? That's all our business is. Now, what if we sat down and I did that for you, and I say, you know what, in your case, it's 6 of one, a half a dozen of another. Do you need to sell it soon? Then the listing's really not an option. So now you either have to believe what I'm telling you about in the investment world is true, or you're going to go around to 6 more investors and see, in fact, that I am telling you the truth. Now, that would aggravate me. If we've really drawn the conclusion that, yep, it's going to be an investor sale, and I can't convince you that I have to have a margin, then I'm not good at what I do. That would aggravate me. Then I would be frustrated at myself if I didn't put that one together. But where a legitimate problem is that the people sit there and go, I don't have a big time frame problem, and so that's okay. I'll wait the 6 months. One of the things I had mentioned, one of the things I asked you is, do you own one? I owned one at the very beginning of my buying career, where I literally sold a house below market. And it happened in a funny way, because I had listed a property that I had as a rental. And we got an offer from out of the blue from an investment company. And the listing agent, Dave Cooley, was so embarrassed by it, he didn't want to even give it to me. We had a house that was worth in the high 70s now back then, and the offer was $60,000. He was mortified, so he kept it. And finally, I guess he got forced to give it to me. And he told me, he said, you're going to be upset. But what he didn't know is I had just put under contract a $130,000 house for $70,000. And all of a sudden, my situation changed within 24 hours ago. He told me what the offer was. I said, well, Dave, not only will I accept that offer, I'll only accept that offer if they'll pay the same for my residence. And this guy about passed out on the other side of the phone. It was that day that I understood the benefit of owning what we do. Because without selling both of those houses, I wouldn't have been able to go and put down all the money I needed to buy a 2,500 square foot house for my family. And I needed to do it with cash and quickly. So that was the vehicle. Remember I said there's times where we're not losing anything. We're making it possible to get a vehicle to go from there to here. And so in essence, I owned one that day. It was probably the best favor for me because I realized that, my goodness, look at that. Early on in my career, that is something I did myself with eyes wide open, knowing it was less than it was worth because it served me over here. And one of the chapters you have is pre-qualify, but don't prejudge. Right. So how do you know what's going on in somebody else's life? You don't. And there's no law in giving somebody an option saying, you know what, if you need this to be over quickly, then this is the number, and we can perform.
Let me also, you drew a distinction that doesn't exist. You said in your question, in here we're talking about one call closing, but now we're supposed to build relationships. When you read sales infiltration, not only will you generally get the idea, you'll see a specific example of a friend of mine in New England who just recently passed away, who sold china, glassware, giftware, that type of thing. And you will see how I actually timed it, what he says, and I think the time is in the chapter. He builds a relationship in like 5 minutes or whatever it is. Forgive me if I got the thing wrong. I haven't read it in a while. But he goes in and he establishes the relationship building process and a agreed upon relationship in a matter of minutes with a script you can use. It's right in the book. And he talks about, you know, we have people come out here and give the quick hustle and all. If you want me to send one of the new kids out from the office, I'll be happy to do it. But here's how I work. And then he goes through the process. And it's like when somebody dies, I don't know what they are. I always try to remember and I forget them. But there's like five steps of, you know, grief, acceptance, anger, whatever it is. And then you start dating again. I don't know exactly how that works. But preferably do not hit on women at the funeral. Gentlemen, that's in bad taste. Or the widow. So anyway, there's like five steps of acceptance, anger, whatever, and there's psychological truisms. Some people go through them in years. You know, they're still agonizing and grieving and so on. Other people breeze through it pretty quick. I mean, but they still have to hit all the points. If you're going to build a relationship, you know, the real estate people used to build relationships, so they're going to go bankrupt if they try it now, where you load the people from Ohio in the back seat with the kids and the ice cream cones, and for 6 months you drive all over Southern California looking at houses, and they're sticking the cone against the window and so on. But at the end, you got a good friend, right? Well, in that chapter, you'll discover you can build that relationship and get on with it in 4 or 5 minutes, or 10 minutes, or whatever. There are ways to get through it. You got to hit all the steps. So it's not, this is one call closing, but we're building relationships. You still got to hit all the steps. It's like people coming up to me several times today and yesterday. This is great for face-to-face selling, but I'm in telephone selling. There is no difference in face-to-face selling and telephone selling, except that you don't have to drive around in your car 50 miles between appointments. You have a disconnect button.
We got one more question. Never mind, it's Tony.
No, it's actually a question and a comment. My comment, Mr. Gay, first is that I appreciate the work that you've done because you actually helped me to understand what it is that I do. I've never been able to understand what it is that I was doing. You've done the work to put it into words.
You're really a lot like Alex. I know you're both from, you know, Cuban, and I maybe that Alex can do it just
that
like you.
That must be. It has something to do with Fidel Castro. I'm not sure.
Thank you.
A lot of cigar smoke, but I really appreciate it because a lot of us have been standing out here talking sometimes, trying to synthesize what is it that works for us, for the ones that are really successful in this business. And what I listened on the way in to Closers 2, a part of it today and yesterday, because I have almost a two-hour drive in. On the CDs, and I went to the infiltrator. I have to admit that the infiltrator word at first kind of put me off a little bit because I always thought of myself as being more of a friend, let's say, befriending the person. But now I understand it's the same thing.
Right.
That's the first thing. But one of the comments that have been coming up that I've been hearing a lot from a lot of the folks in the audience is, in terms of the script, and I heard you clearly, I think some folks are having a problem with that because they're thinking, okay, what are we doing? This is like canned comments or something. But you did mention also that a script is I think almost a script is as much for us, isn't it, or as much as it would be for the person that you're dealing with. And we should try to make that as much ours as possible.
Sure.
Inject into it maybe the words that we use. For example, I do exactly what you suggested when you first go speak to someone, but I use the words promise. I say, I'm going to promise to tell you the truth about any question you want to ask me here today, but I'm going to ask you to please promise that you'll be honest with me. And to me, that word promise, I don't know where I got that, but I guess that's a word that it works for me because it really makes me feel that commitment. So I think some folks out here sometimes, I was having a problem with the word script too because I have a brother who's really hardcore sales guy and we've never had a lot in common. And he's always used words like, script and what was the other one?
Canned presentation, canned pitch.
Yeah, the pitch. That would make me nuts. You know. He would actually practice on me when we were kids before he would, go to my dad and ask him if he could stay at his friend's house to see what the objections were going to be, So he's a really born salesperson. But if you could address that a little bit clearer, because I think some of the folks are actually having a little problem thinking of the script as something that they're going to be repeating like an actor would over and over and over again without really having a sense of that person, because that person is going to be a little different every time.
Well, first of all, let me not back off of it, Tony. Thank you very much.
Right.
You were a legend in my mind before I got here because of all the nice things Bruce has told me about you.
Thank you very much. It's an honor
to meet you. And I met you last night, but an honor to meet you and hear from you. So thank you, sir. And when I said go looking for somebody, if you can get any time from him, find out what he's up to. I won't back off the script thing. Call it whatever you want. Call it mumbo lala. Whatever makes you happy, call it. All we're saying is whatever you're saying that is effective, know what it is. And if it's not effective, find out what somebody else is saying that is effective. And then record it, then write it down, transcribe it, have a secretarial service do it. You have to spring for $4 or $5 there. I know that's a career buster, but get it down and learn it. But it's no more than a direct mail piece. It's not insincere. My script is sincere. Therefore, I don't want to miss anything. So I learned the best way to do it. If I find a better way to do it, I change that. A direct mail letter that tells you the truth is not insincere because they mailed a million of them. It's the best direct mail piece they could put together. And it tells the story the best way they can. I don't know, I've spent a lot of my life defending scripting while everybody who works on scripts gets rich and most of the people who don't work on scripts remain poor. I don't understand why I have to defend it. I probably what I ought to do, and I know why you asked the question, Tony, and that was good-hearted of you, I appreciate it. But for those of you who are having trouble with it, I ought to take you out somewhere, buy you a glass of wine, and sit down and say, all right, Dumbo, you defend winging it every time. I want to hear what are the benefits of winging it every time. And before we do that, you put your checkbook on the table and I'll put mine down, just so we have sort of a feel for where we each are, okay? And then when you get finished, you'll have a very difficult time defending it. I'll say, okay, now here's what scripting has made me this month. Let's look in yours. See, it's the way the pros work. I know most of the heavy hitters in this country, commissioned heavy hitters, not the Xerox types. I don't know anybody that works at Xerox, okay? But the commissioned heavy hitters, I know them all. They all work on scripts. They all write down goals, or they have them in their head. They're clear cut. I said some of them are silly. When I was talking to Owens Corning, they said, well, we paid you, we brought you out, we sold a lot of product, everybody was happy, and so on. It was about a $40,000 day for me. And they said, what are you going to do for that? And I said, it's funny you should ask. I have on my list of things I want to get, but I can't get them unless this happens, getting two packages of white socks at Costco. And if you invite me back next year, I'm gonna get some underwear. You know, it's just, it's a game. It's just a game. And I'm telling you, I'm good at the game, and I know lots of people are good at the game, and we all use planned presentations. It's not like, tell you what I'm going to do, like the old guy on Milton Berle or whatever that show was, you know, and that's a canned presentation. That's fine, probably works to a certain degree. Beggars on the Street, if you've ever seen some of those shows where they work them, you know, you walk a half a block, turn around, come back this way, turn around, go. They have a script, whatever it is. Buddy, could you spare a dime? I won't lie to you, I want beer. I gave a guy $20 the other day down at Fisherman's Wharf. He came up to me and he said, I know you're expecting a story about my misery. I'm really not that miserable. I want some money for a drink. I said, what's a bottle what you drink cost? Now you can say, well, you're ruining his life. He was going to drink it anyway. I said, I just cut into your time. What? How much time? And he says, well, I'm just going to buy a bottle of Jack Daniels. I said, I don't know how much it cost. Here's $20. I appreciate your honesty.
It's a good start.
Yeah, it's a good start. Yeah. Step one. It works. And sometimes it's misused. It's like a gun works. Sometimes for good, sometimes for evil, but it works. We were talking about, Bruce was talking about con men yesterday. J. Douglas Edwards used to say the only difference between a con man and a salesman, now a salesperson, con person, I guess you'd say now, and politically correct, the only difference between a con man and a salesman is belief in product. What does a con man do? What does the term con man come from? He wins your confidence. That's what I do every day. But it's not a con because I only represent and work with companies I respect, I believe in what they're doing, etc. But it's an effective method of communication. And we all of us who do well, say the same things over and over again. And somebody said to me at a seminar recently, doesn't it drive you crazy to say the same thing over and over again? I said, sometimes it does, but I make a game out of it, and I change my voice inflection here a little bit, and I'm always testing. But every time I get depressed, I go over to the computer, and I look up my Vanguard account. And I'm over the depression. Because it filled up to the point it is, and some of the other things we do and have and so on, all came from scripting. Every penny of it. I don't do anything not on script. That has anything to do with business.
I think we'll end on that note. Thank you very much. You guys have been a super audience today.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, guys.
Bless you.
Ben, thank you.
Thank you, sir.
My pleasure.